Tungata had picked up the sergeant's fallen trench knife, and now he dropped onto the reclining trooper, driving one knee into his diaphragm, forcing all the air from his lungs in a single explosive sigh, and then pressing the point of the knife into the soft flesh below his ear. Still on his back, the man's face swelled and contorted as he struggled to refill his lungs. "If any man cries out," Tungata whispered, "I will cut off his testicles and stick them in his mouth." It had all taken less than 5 seconds. Tungata knelt beside the sergeant, whom Craig had stoned, and felt for the pulse in his throat. After a few seconds, he shook his head and began stripping the corpse of its battle smock. He shrugged into it, and it was too small for him, binding across the chest. "Take the gunner's uniform," he ordered, while he took the Uzi from Craig and covered the two prisoners with it. The machine gunner's neck was broken. Tungata had jerked back his helmet, and the strap had caught under his chin. The dead man's camouflage smock stank of rancid, stale sweat and tobacco smoke, but it fitted Craig well enough. The steel helmet was too big. It came down to his eyes, but covered his long, straight hair. Tungata thrust his face close to those of the prisoners. "Drag the bodies of these Shona dogs with you." Craig and Tungata covered them, while they pulled the two naked dead men feet first through the grass to the cave entrance, and then rolled them down the slope into the dark interior. The two girls were shocked and silenced. "Strip," Tungata ordered the prisoners. When they were in their army-issue shorts, Tungata ordered Craig, "Tie them." Craig gestured them to lie on their stomachs, and using the nylon rope, bound their wrists at the small of the back, then pulled up their legs and bound their wrists to their ankles. It was a hog tie that left them helpless. Then he pulled the stockings off their feet and stuffed them into their mouths and tied the gags in place. While he was working, Tungata was dressing the girls in the discarded battle dress. It was many sizes too large, but they folded back the cuffs at wrists and ankles and belted the trousers in a bunch around their waists. "Black your face, Pendula," Tungata ordered, and she smeared herself. "Hands also. Now cover your hair." He pulled a beret out of a pocket of his purloined smock and tossed it to her. "Come on." Tungata picked up the canvas bag of diamonds and started back up the slope. He led them back to the abandoned machine gun nest. Tungata tipped up a field pack, emptying it out onto the ground, and then shoved the bag of diamonds into the pack and rebuckled it. He slung the pack onto his back. Craig had been ransacking the other equipment. He passed two grenades to Tungata and stuffed two more into his own pockets. He found a Tukarev pistol for Sarah and gave another Uzi to Sally Ann. There was an AK-47 for himself with 5 spare magazines. Tungata kept the second Uzi. Craig added a water bottle to his load. He broke open an emergency pack of chocolate and they all stuffed their mouths as they prepared to leave. It tasted so good that Craig's eyes watered. "I will take the point," Tungata spoke through a sticky mouthful of chocolate. "We will try and get down into the valley, under cover of the trees." They kept just under the shoulder of the hill, going directly down the slope, taking the chance that the open slope to their right was clear. They were just above the tree line when they heard the helicopter. It was coming up the valley. It was still behind the shoulder of the hill, but coming on fast. "Hit the ground," Craig ordered, and slammed Sally Ann between the shoulder blades with the flat of his hand. They went down and pushed their faces to the earth, but the beat of the rotors changed, altering to coarse pitch, and now the sound was stationary, just out of their line of sight behind the fold of rocky hillside. "It's landing," Sally Ann said, and the engine noise died away. "She's down," Sally Ann cocked her head. "She's landed. There, she's cut her motor." In the silence, they could hear very faintly orders being shouted. "Apufo, come up here," Tungata ordered. "You two, wait." Craig and Tungata crawled up to the shoulder of the hill and very slowly raised their heads to look over the crest. Below them, a quarter of a mile down the valley, there was a small level clearing at the edge of the forest. The grass had been flattened, and there was an open-sided canvas sun shelter at the edge of the trees on the far side of the clearing. The helicopter stood in the centre of the clearing, and the pilot was climbing down from the fuselage port. There were uniformed troopers of the 3rd Brigade under the trees near the tent, and in the tent they could make out 3 or 4 other men sitting at a table.
"Advanced headquarters," Craig murmured.
"This is the valley that we entered. The main cave is just below us."
"You're right."
Craig had not recognized the ground from this direction and height.
"Looks as though they are pulling out,"
Tungata pointed into the trees. A platoon of camouflaged troopers was moving back down the valley in Indian file.
"They probably waited for 48 hours or so after dynamiting the Grand Gallery. Now they must have given us up for dead and buried."
"How many?"
Tungata asked.
"I can see," Craig screwed up his eyes. "Oh, 20 at least, not counting those in the tent. There'll be others staking out the hills, of course."
Tungata drew back from the skyline and beckoned to Sally Ann. She crawled up beside him.
"What do you make of that machine?" he pointed at the helicopter.
"It's a Super Frelon," she replied without hesitation.
"Can you fly it?"
"I can fly anything."
"Damn it, Sally Ann, don't be clever," Craig whispered irritably. "Have you ever flown one of those?"
"Not a Super Frelon, but I have 500 hours on helicopters."
"How long would it take you to start up and get moving once you're in the cockpit?"
Now she hesitated.
2 or 3 minutes?"
"Oh, it's too long." Craig shook his head.
"What if we can pull the guards away from the clearing while Pendula starts up?" Tungata asked.
"Well, that might work," Craig agreed.
"This is it, then."
Tungata set it out quickly.
"I will track up to the head of the valley. You take the girls down to the edge of the clearing. Got it?"
Craig nodded.
45 minutes from now," Tungata checked his wristwatch. 9:30 exactly. I will start throwing grenades and firing with the AK. That should pull most of the Shona away from the clearing. As soon as the shooting starts, you head for the helicopter. When I hear the helicopter lift off, I'll run out on the open slope there," he pointed up the valley, "just below that rock sheet. The Shona will not have reached me by that time. You can make the pickup from there."
"Oh, let's do it."
Craig passed Tungata the AK-47 and the spare magazines. "I'll keep the Uzi and the one grenade." He took the submachine gun from Tungata.
"Take the diamonds also."
Tungata shrugged out of the straps of the backpack and pushed it across to Craig.
"See you later."
Craig slapped his shoulder, and Tungata slid away down the slope. Craig led the two girls straight down along the spine of the hill, keeping in the scrub and broken rock. It was a relief to reach the tree line and discover a ravine that angled back along the edge of the clearing. They crept down it, Craig cautiously lifting his head above the bank to check their progress every few hundred feet.
"This is as close as we can get to the helicopter," he whispered,
and the girl sank down, resting below the lip of the bank. Craig slipped out of the heavy pack and had another look over the bank. The helicopter stood out in the open, 150 paces away. The pilot was squatting beside the landing gear in the shade cast by the fuselage. The Super Frelon was a bulky, blunt-nosed machine painted dull sage green. Craig sank below again beside Sally Ann.
"What range does it have?"
Craig asked in a whisper.
"Not certain,"
Sally Ann whispered back.
"With full tanks, about 600 miles, I'd guess."
"Pray for full tanks."
Craig glanced at his Rolex.
10 minutes.
From his pocket, he handed them each another slab of chocolate. Sally Ann's sweat had streaked the blackening on her cheeks. Craig mixed dirt and water from the bottle into a muddy paste and repaired her makeup. Then she did the same to him.
2 minutes.
Craig checked the time and glanced over the bank. The helicopter pilot stood up and stretched. Then he climbed back into the Super Frelon.
"Something's happening," Craig murmured.
The helicopter partially obscured his view of the tent across the clearing, but he could see that there was activity over there as well. A small group was leaving the tent. The guards were saluting and strutting about importantly. And then suddenly the rotors of the helicopter turned and the starter motor whirred noisily. Blue smoke fired from the exhaust vents, and with a roar the main engine of the Super Frelon came to life.
A pair of officers left the group in front of the tent and started across the clearing, heading for the helicopter.
"We've got trouble," Craig muttered grimly. "They're pulling out." And then he started. "Oh, that's Peter Fungabera."
Peter was wearing the burgundy beret with silver leopard head cap badge, the bright rows of decoration ribbons on his chest, and the scarf in the opening of his battle smock. Under one arm was tucked his swagger stick. While he walked, he was in deep discussion with a tall, elderly white man, whom Craig had never seen before. The white man wore a plain khaki safari jacket. His head was bare. His hair was cropped to the scalp, and his skin had a peculiarly repulsive, pasty white texture. He carried a black leather attaché case, which was locked to his wrist with a steel chain. He cocked his head to listen to Peter Fungabera's impassioned discourse as they walked towards the waiting helicopter. Halfway between the tent and the helicopter, the two of them came to a stop and argued animatedly. The white man was gesticulating vehemently with his free hand. He was close enough now for Craig to notice that his eyes were so pale that they gave him the sightless stare of a marble bust. His skin was pocked with ancient scars, yet he was very much the dominating figure of the pair. His manner was brusque, almost contemptuous, as though he now regarded Peter Fungabera as superfluous, unworthy of his serious attention. Peter Fungabera, on the other hand, had the shattered look of a survivor of an air crash. He appeared confused. His voice was raised so that Craig could hear its pleading tone, if not the actual words. This was hardly the man that Craig had known. The white man made a gesture of dismissal, and turning away from Peter Fungabera, started once more towards the helicopter. At that moment there was the crumping detonation of an exploding grenade, and the two men in the clearing turned quickly to look up the valley in the direction from which the explosion had sounded. Now there was a burst of automatic AK-47 fire from the same direction, and immediately the urgent shout of orders around the tent. Troopers began doubling along the edge of the clearing, heading up the valley. Another burst of automatic fire, and the attention of every man was focused in that direction. Hastily, Craig pulled the pack onto his back. "Come on," he snapped. "You know what to do." The three of them scrambled out of the ravine and moved out into the clearing. "Don't hurry," Craig cautioned them softly. They kept in a compact group, moving quickly but purposefully over the open ground towards Fungabera and his companion. Craig took the grenade from his pocket and with his teeth drew the pin. He held the grenade in his left hand. In his right he carried the Uzi, loaded and cocked with rapid fire selected. They were within 5 paces before Peter Fungabera glanced around, and his astonishment was almost comical as he recognized Craig even under his mud mask. "At this range I can cut you in half," Craig warned him, lifting the Uzi to the level of Peter's belly. "This grenade is armed. If I drop it, it will blow us all to hell." He had to shout above the sound of the helicopter's engine. The white man spun to face him, and his pale arctic eyes were savage. "Go for the pilot!" Craig ordered the girls, and they ran to the fuselage port of the helicopter. "Now, both of you," Craig told the two men, "walk to the helicopter. Don't hurry, don't shout." Craig followed 3 paces behind them. Before they reached the helicopter, the pilot appeared in the open port, both his hands high above his head, and Sarah behind him, with the Tokarev pistol in his back. "Get out!" Craig ordered, and with obvious relief the pilot jumped down to the ground. "Tell them that General Fungabera is a hostage," Craig said. "Any attack will endanger him. Do you understand?" "Yes," the pilot nodded. "Now walk back to that tent. Walk slowly. Don't run. Don't shout." The pilot set off gratefully, but as soon as he was clear, he broke into a trot. "Get in," Craig gestured to the port with the Uzi. But Peter Fungabera glared at him, and his head sank down menacingly on his wide shoulders. "Don't do it," Craig backed off a pace, for there was an air of desperation about Peter Fungabera, the reckless quality of a man with nothing more to lose. "Move," Craig ordered. "Get up that ladder." And Peter Fungabera charged at him, almost as though he were courting death. He ran straight onto the muzzle of the Uzi. However, Craig was poised to meet him. He brought up the weapon and crashed the barrel across the side of Peter Fungabera's head with a force that dropped him onto his knees. As Peter went down, Craig swung the Uzi back onto the white man, anticipating any move he might make. "Help him up the ladder," he ordered. and although the white man was encumbered by the black attaché case chained to his wrist, the menace of the Uzi was persuasive, and he stooped over Peter Fungabera and lifted him to his feet. Still stunned by the blow, Peter reeled in the man's grasp. He was mumbling dazedly. "It doesn't matter now, it's all over anyway."
"Shut up, you fool," the white man hissed at him.
"Get him into the helicopter." Craig prodded the Uzi into the white man's back, and the pair started towards the ladder. "Keep the gun on them, Sarah," Craig called, and glanced over his shoulder. The helicopter pilot had almost reached the edge of the clearing.
"Hurry it up,"
Craig snarled at them, and the white man shoved Peter Fungabera through the port and clambered up after him, with the black case dangling on its chain from his wrist. Craig jumped up into the body of the helicopter. "Over there," he ordered his two prisoners to the bench seat. "Strap yourselves in." Then to Sarah, "Tell Pendula to get going." The helicopter lifted off and rose swiftly out of the clearing, and Craig tossed the grenade out of the open port. It dropped away and exploded in the forest far below. Craig hoped the explosion would heighten the confusion down there. Craig stood behind Peter Fungabera with the Uzi pressed to the nape of his neck, while with his free hand he reached over and pulled the Tokarev pistol from the holster on Peter's hip. He thrust it into his own pocket. Then he backed off and buckled on the engineer's safety straps at the doorway. As Sarah clambered down from the cockpit, he ordered her, "Cover them both!" And he leaned out of the port and peered ahead. Almost immediately he saw Tungata. He was already out of the trees, just below the rock slope, waving both hands over his head, brandishing the AK-47. "Hold on, I'm going down for the pickup," Sally Ann's voice squealed from the two-way speaker above Craig's head. The big helicopter dropped swiftly down towards where Tungata was waiting, and Sally Ann steadied the machine and hovered above his head. All around Tungata, the grass was blown flat by the downdraft, and Tungata's stolen battle smock rippled and whipped about his body. He threw the AK-47 aside and looked up at Craig. The helicopter sank down the last few feet, and Craig leaned out of the hatch and made an arm for him. Tungata jumped, and they locked arms at the elbows, and Craig swung him aboard. "Okay," he yelled up at the speaker, "go for it!" And they went bounding up into the sky so swiftly that Craig's knees buckled. At a little over 1,000 feet, Sally Ann went straight and level and turned onto a westerly heading. Tungata turned to the figures on the bench seat and checked. He stared at Peter Fungabera ferociously, but Peter slumped, still dazed and beaten, on the bench seat. "Where did you find them, Pufo?" Tungata asked huskily. "They are a little present for you, Sam." Craig handed him the Uzi submachine gun. "It's loaded and cocked. Can I leave you to look after this pair of beauties?"
"It will afford me the greatest of pleasure."
Tungata turned the gun on the two men sitting side by side on the bench seat.